To you, sir.
All right, cool. We're going to talk about documentation. This will be, yeah. All right, this is going to be the second most passionate and exciting talk on documentation that's ever occurred. It's going to be amazing. The first one, that's a good question. So the first one, I think, honestly, in my personal opinion, let me stop presenting here for a second. The first one, I think, was given by, where is it? I have it up. So yeah, this guy. This is Eric Holscher, I think is how you pronounce it. Oh, you can't see it because I'm apparently doing that like extend thing. Okay, this is Eric. There we go. There's Eric Holscher. How can we get rid of that sidebar? So Eric Holscher is the founder of Read the Docs. If you're familiar with that, it's a documentation service. And we ran into Eric. Actually, it was Hanselman. Is Hanselman here? Where's Hanselman? He's on the hallway. Well, Hanselman ran into Eric, and because we were looking at all sorts of different options for our documentation system, and you know, I don't think you could imagine someone more passionate and interested in documentation than Eric is. It defied my capability, my ability to imagine someone who's just that interested in docs. He just sort of lives and breathes documentation. He goes around and gives talks about the importance of running great docs and how we should all do it and market our software and our products, and works on great tools for writing documentation. So I'm actually basing a good chunk of my talk on stuff that Eric said at DjangoCon earlier this year. So, you know, gotta give him props. But this will be the second most passionate talk. If you want to see the first, you should go check out his DjangoCon talk. It's pretty good. All right, so we're going to talk about docs.asp.net, and we are back. I don't know why it keeps doing that extend thing. But let me tell you a little about what we were trying to accomplish with our docs. We were looking at our docs. We had just taken the product and made it open source. We were doing everything on GitHub. And we've done a completely new web framework, a new web stack. And we thought to ourselves, you know, we really need to go back to a lot of the basics, stuff that we documented back in the, you know, .NET 1.0, .NET 2.0 days when we started out with ASP.NET and really introduced people to the stack. We need to do that again, because a lot of this stuff is very new, all the cross-platform story, the new middleware model, the new hosting model. We need a new documentation set. So we plan to write a whole bunch of new content that really it reintroduces people to the stack and its new ideas, the way it's been architected and framed. And we wanted to do the documentation open source. I mean, we're open source, our code is open source, and we wanted to involve the community in writing these docs. If there's a problem with the doc, you shouldn't have to sit there and submit a comment and then wait, you know, years and years for someone to finally get everything around to fixing it. You should be able to contribute, make a change, submit new content, even new articles, and we should be able to pull those into our docs and have them become part of the broader docs. So really, this is docs not just from Microsoft for you. This is docs that are for the community and by the community. We wanted them to be really easy to update and maintain, that you should be able to make a change and see it live in near real time, so that sort of continuous deployment type of model. We wanted the tools that we use for our docs to themselves also be open source. We're open source, the docs are open source. We think the tools that we're using should also be open source. And we want to demonstrate and exemplify best practices. And what I mean by that, and I feel particularly strong about this one, is that whatever we do for our .NET documentation, you should be able to do too. Like, it's not something that should be just for us. It should be something that anyone can look at and say, okay, I see what they're doing. I'm going to do that for my own package, my NuGet package library, or my own component, or whatever. So those were the things that we wanted to accomplish. We had a bunch of additional feature requirements, like we need to be able to version our docs. We're going to ship lots of different packages, each with different versions. How are we going to handle all that? We ship globally, so we need to be able to localize our content. We need to have great search, basic features. We want to have API ref docs based off of our / comments and code. And we also wanted to have offline viewing experiences where you can read the docs on the website, but if you want to read them on a plane or on your ebook reader, you should be able to get PDFs and EPUB or just download a zip file of all the HTML. This is all things that we wanted. And we looked around, And we found a really great solution in Read the Docs. Scott Hansman spent some time with the Read the Docs guys and prototyping a bunch of things. You know, can we do this with .NET? I mean, Read the Docs is really based off of what is fundamentally the Python community's documentation system. Does it work for .NET? Can we do API ref docs? You know, how does the system work? And they spent some days prototyping things. And yeah, we found that, yes, this is absolutely doable, which was really exciting. So our new site, docs.asp.net, is hosted on Read the Docs. It's currently hosted actually now on readthedocs.com, which is their paid offering. And our repo with all the doc content is public on GitHub. That's github.com/asp.net/docs. And you can go there and see the content and contribute. We have a whole bunch of PRs that are in flight right now, some of them coming from the community. Scott Sargent, is Scott Sargent actually here? I don't even know if he's here. But Scott Sargent, a guy from the community, he pinged us. I think he was on the ASP.NET Insiders list or something like that. And he's offered to write some content for the docs. And he submitted a PR recently for our routing to MVC actions content on the docs, which is great. So we'll look at that and pull it in. We're getting actually a steady flow of community contributions. A good chunk of them are just like little, you know, you misspelled this, or you know, this is not quite up to date anymore, given that you just shipped beta 8 when this was written in beta 7, those types of things. Some of them are much bigger. Our installation instructions on CentOS were written entirely by the community. We had for a little while, you know, this blurb that said, you know, eventually we'll get around to writing our CentOS installation instructions. And then a couple guys in the community said, oh, we'll help you out there. And they worked on it and worked with us. And we got that content in, which was really exciting. Not everything is written. And we're being very transparent about this. And I'm still trying to judge if this was a good idea. I think it's a good idea. We decided early on that we were going to publish the TOC for our docs with no content. And we put all these wrenches next to every single link to let people know, you know, we intend to write something here, but it's not there yet. And in fact, here's even the GitHub issue that you can go to see the issue tracking this content. And if you want to, you know, contribute, and here, you know, here's our contributing guidance, and feel free. We'd love to have that. And gradually those wrenches have been disappearing and more content has been lighting up. But there's still plenty more to do, and we still hope to have a great doc set by the time we ship ASP.NET 5. So we're doing it. We're not the only ones doing this in the .NET community. The EF guys have ef.readthedocs.org. The .NET guys have a bunch of content on .NET.readthedocs.org. And you know, you can do it too. And I'll talk a little bit about how to do that. So let's look at the docs. Let me escape out of this and switch back to duplicating. All right, so I'm just going to go through the site a little bit and the stuff that's on the site. I think we can get rid of Eric here. So docs.asp.net is our documentation site, and it's just a bunch of topics. You can see all the topics here. There are the famous wrenches that let you know what content is there and what content is not yet available. And this is hosted on Read the Docs and also built by Read the Docs. It has a very nice theme that they provide that we have customized a fair bit here to align it with the rest of the ASP.NET site. But it does things like, you know, nice reactive rendering so that it works on mobile devices. If you were to just go ahead and set up a project on Read the Docs, you'll get this sort of gray and blue theme. Let me bring up the EF Docs. Here's the EF Docs. This is sort of the default theme, but you can go and customize the CSS styles, or if you just want to completely customize the theme, you can go in with Django templates and do whatever you want. You'll notice that there's a nice sidebar nav on the left and a full TOC. This is one of the really nice things about this system is the TOC creation. A lot of the artifacts in the docs are semantic to the content, and I'll show a little bit more about that later. Down here in the bottom left-hand corner, you'll notice there's this picker. And the picker lets me do a few things. One is I can toggle between different versions. Right now I'm on latest. You see that at the top? That's the default. But I can go back to the beta 7 docs and see our content for beta 7, pop up to beta 8. And we have RC1 content also in the works. There's also the different formats that you can just download straight from here. There's PDF, a zip file with HTML, the EPUB document. And then, of course, it knows that we're on GitHub, and provides links so that people who are looking at our docs and want to edit or change it, they can just go ahead and do that. Up here, there's an edit on GitHub link that you can click on and do stuff with. Let me do that, show what that looks like. So now that pops you right over to GitHub. You'll notice that GitHub understands the format that Read the Docs uses. Read the Docs is actually, it's not Markdown based, it's based on a different format called Restructured Text. Talk a little bit more in detail about what restructured text is and why we think it's a good idea. But first thing you should notice is that GitHub understands restructured text and is giving you some rendering of the restructured text natively inside of GitHub. If I want to change this, I'm just going to edit the file. Now you're just in the standard GitHub pull request flow. As an example, I thought I was in the .NET open mic session last night. And one of our past Microsofties, Phil Hack. Is Phil Hack here? Is Phil around? No. Well, he made some comments about that we really need to work on the coolness factor in .NET. That ASP.NET MVC. That just has too many syllables. We got to shorten that down to something cool. Something like one syllable. And so I thought we would rename ASP.NET right here. Like, this is obviously the not cool enough name. And I was doing some market research on this earlier. I was searching for cool one syllable words. What is it? Cool. I actually tried searching for cool single syllable words, but cool and single in a search query, that's just tends to be apparently that's a bad idea. Like, don't do search that. So cool one syllable words. Let's see what we get. The 13 greatest one-syllable catchphrases in television. Okay, cool. Sure. Like, we could call it dough. We can call it dough. That might work. What else have we got? I can't. We've got all the wonderful bam. We call it bam after the. What else? Well, from Doctor Who. Yup. Zoinks. We could call it zoinks. That'd be cool. I was thinking about this, and it dawned on me that Phil Hack's last name is a one-syllable word, right? And that's a pretty cool name, honestly, for a software developer. So maybe we could just call it like Hack. Well, that'd be cool. Like, that'd be fun. Anyway, so then you make your changes. You guys get this. So you make your changes, and then normally I have contributor rights, but normally you just say, yeah, fork the repo, create my PR, and we look at your PR. If it looks good, we pull it in. And then as soon as it gets pulled in, it builds on the server, and you see the doc changes on the server. I'm not actually going to rename it to Hack. I'm sorry, Phil Hack, wherever you are. We do love you, but I'm not going to rename it to Hack at this time. Maybe Zoinks. All right, so that's Read the Docs. So we saw versioning, the new theme. It's got a bunch of nice stuff. Oh, I wanted to show that this is the ASP.NET 5 docs. We also have separated out the MVC docs. It's actually a separate project. It's a sub-project of the ASP.NET project, but it's a separate project. So if you click on the MVC, you'll actually see that it has a separate TOC. So if you've been looking for the MVC docs, like, where are they? They're actually on a separate page, really, and they have their own table of contents. That's because we want to make sure we're preserving that layering. You have your core ASP.NET ideas, and then MVC. Very similar in Node. You have Node, and then you have, like, Express and whatever your web frameworks are. SignalR would be something similar. There is an issue right now that on Read the Docs, they don't do searches through to sub-projects yet, but we've talked to them, and that's something that they have on their radar. So if you're on the ASP.NET side, searching for MVC-isms and you're not finding them, that's why. Eventually that will get fixed, but for now, just go to the MVC site and then search there. All right, cool. So that's the site. That's what we've been working on. You saw how you could do quick edits. If you want to just change something easily on the docs, just click on the edit on GitHub link, submit a PR, and away you go. If you need to do something more substantial, like you want to write a new article for us, that would be great. We'd love to have you guys write content for us. You do probably then want to set up local builds of the docs on your machine. It's really easy to do. You do need to install Python. This is a Python-based documentation system. And I will admit that initially that irked me like crazy. I was like, what? So I got to install Python to write .NET docs? But Hanselman calmed me down and said, no, it's okay, because we looked, and you know, honestly, this is the best-in-class documentation system that we found. As soon as we have a open-source, community-based documentation system built on .NET for .NET, we will use it in a heartbeat. We do have some folks on our MSDN team that I was working on some stuff. They have shipped a thing called DocFX as an early preview. DocFX can do things like API ref gen and do some like static site generation for API ref docs. That's interesting. We're actually using some of that for our API ref docs on Read the Docs. But until then, this is the best there is, and so we're using it. And it's the Python stuff's not that bad. For people contributing, you won't even see it. You won't even worry about it. If you want to do a local build, you will need to install Python. Go get Python 3 whatever from python.org, and then you'll want to install Sphinx. And Sphinx is the actual documentation builder that gets used. So pip install Sphinx. Pip is the moral equivalent of NuGet in the Python world, and then you're good to go. Then you just clone the docs repo. Make HTML is how you build the docs, and then create some restructured text files and write your docs and build them and see how they look. Once you're done, submit us a PR and we'll take a look. We do have contributing guidance that goes through these steps in more detail. Let's see. Oh man, I gotta stop using this presenter mode. How do I stop using presenter mode? Escape. Now I'm extended again. And there's like a button someplace. I think the problem is I wasn't doing it yesterday. So where's the button that says like, don't take me to presenter mode? Slideshow. Use presenter view. Thank you. Okay. So of course now I can't click on the link. There we go. So here's our contributing guidance. This is on GitHub. This will walk you through what to install and how to install Sphinx and so forth. So that will get you going on actually doing local doc builds. And then Steve, raise your hand. Steve's back there. Steve's actually been doing a bunch of doc writing for us, which is great. He recently put together a nice little video on how to get going with contributing to the ASP.NET 5 docs. So you can take a look at that on ourdallas.com. Nice little video. Walking you through, where is it? Come on up. There, yeah, contribute to docs.asp.net. So take a look at those. That'll help you get started as well. All right, if you're wondering what should you write, like what content should you actually go and try and tackle, well, first of all, look at the wrenches that are on the site. Those are all fair game. There's also a whole bunch of issues on the site of things that need to be tweaked or updated because we release fairly quickly, and keeping the docs up to date to the most current release is a challenge. Once you find either a topic that you want to go after or an issue, go ahead and comment on the issue and say, hey, I'd love to help out with this. We'll then contact you back and say, sounds great, let's talk about it. If you want to propose something completely new, like you think we're missing something in the TOC, that's fine as well. Just open a new issue, let us know, we'll take a look, and we're happy to work with you on that. Once we've got an agreement, yep, that's a good thing to work on. We recommend working with us on setting up an outline or just discussing initially what the changes will be, just so you don't go off and write a whole bunch of content and we look at it and say, that's not really what we're looking for. We've done actually like Skype calls with people just to go through things that we think are interesting to doc as well. And so if depending on what you're trying to write, we might work with you in that more detailed manner. Once you've got an outline of something that looks like looks right, you go off and write it, you submit a PR, we submit feedback on the PR in the public, and then when it's done, it gets merged in, shows up on the doc site, and you get fame and fortune. That's what we actually just recently went through with Scott Sargent and his routing doc. I thought I'd go through a little bit about why we made this particular set of technology choices. I know I've had several people come up and ask me about this. Why restructured text? Why not Markdown? Why Read the Docs? And so I thought I'd go through a little bit what we really see as the advantages of this system. This is the technology stack that we're using. We're using Read the Docs, and that's a service that does hosted docs and doc building. It's based on Sphinx, which is the documentation builder for Python, which uses a set of libraries called docutils. And the underlying format that Sphinx uses is RST, or restructured text. What is restructured text? So restructured text is a lightweight markup language. It's like Markdown in that it's just plain text. It's similar to other lightweight markup languages like Wiki Markup or ASCII Doc and so forth. And those are, we think those are nice formats to work with because they play nice with tools that developers are familiar with using, you know, version control systems, diffs, pull requests on GitHub, and so forth. So this works really well, I think, for software-based documentation. If you're thinking, oh, I've got this other thing I need to document, like, I don't know, a how-to article on how to repair fridges or whatever, this might not be the system for you because this is definitely a very software developer-centric documentation system. But the nice thing about restructured text is that it has a lot of rich semantic markup. And I'll show you what I mean by that. By the way, it's of course well documented as a format. That's the link for if you want to learn all about restructured text, sphinx-doc.org/rest. I think as the web developers, we're very familiar with this idea of semantic markup. Having a font tag where you explicitly label the color is red. It's kind of bad, you know, that doesn't really provide any semantics about that this is really supposed to be a warning piece of text. It's better if you assign it like a class and then you can handle the display rendering separately from the actual markup. You can declare that this is supposed to be a warning and then handle its display separately. And restructured text takes that, you know, a step further. You can actually say, I want to put a warning here. And then how that gets rendered or even what format it gets rendered into is then completely configurable. Like Sphinx can build not only into HTML and generate that nice span that you see above, but it can also build you your PDFs and your EPUB files and so forth. Here's another example. This is a case comparing Markdown. Where in the top, that's how you would do a link to an RFC in Markdown, because what is Markdown? It's just a simple way of writing HTML. It's a nice compact way of writing HTML. But there's not really any semantics associated to what you're writing. In restructured text, the way you would reference that RFC is you would say, I am referencing an RFC, and this is the one that I want, 2616. And that would then just render the right link for you. So Markdown, it's great. I mean, you actually can use Markdown with Read the Docs. It does support it. But it's really just for HTML, and it's not semantic. Restructured text does a lot more. It has semantics. You can do table of contents and so forth. It does come with a bit more complexity, so there is that trade-off. When people look at restructured text, there's a little bit more going on because it can do a lot more. It's not, by any stretch of the imagination, a perfect format. There's certainly a lot of quirks, syntaxes that you're sort of like, maybe that could be done differently, but it certainly gets the job done. Let me show you an example. So this is an online restructured text editor that actually Eric wrote, I believe. On the left, there's a bunch of restructured text. Can you guys see it? Is that better? Okay. So on the left, you know, titles and headings, those are done using the underlying syntax where you have a bunch of equal signs or some character that's the length of the header that you want to have. So title, section one, so forth. You want to bold things, double stars is what you use. Italics is single star. The link syntax is different. It's with this, you know, these ticks. But there's a bunch more flexibility in terms of like setting up named links and reusing them in multiple places. You can also inline the link right next to the text if you want. Both syntaxes are supported. Lists or pound, dot, that works. You can have, you know, literal formatting with double ticks is how that works. I think in Markdown it's just a single tick. You can do block literal formatting with a double colon at the end of a block. This is a Python-based language, so you know your indentation and white space is significant. Markdown's white space is significant as well, but I think you feel it a little bit more with restructured text. So there you get block formatting of some text. And you can do even, you know, have baby raccoons. You can have images. Here's a case of what's called a directive. I just messed it up. A directive in restructured text. This is dot, dot, space, and then some directive name with a colon at the end. And there's a whole bunch of directives for doing interesting things like code blocks, images, table of contents, and so forth. So that's most of that probably looks fairly familiar if you're familiar with working with Markdown. It just looks like inline formatting. But you know, even more interesting things you can do once you have restructured text is you can say like, you know, I'd like to have my table of contents here at the top. And it'll just, boom, it recognizes all the section headers and just generate it for you. So that's pretty nice. That example I showed earlier of an RFC, you know, 20, what was ticks, right? 26, 16, boom. And now we got a link to an RFC that I can click, and apparently it will try to open it up in the browser. What happened here? Re-render. Let's do control dot. And now we're at the RFC. So stuff like that. It's got a lot of built-in semantics that are actually very specific to software development, which is really nice. So that's restructured text. On top of restructured text, you then have Sphinx, which is the documentation generator. And it understands restructured text, and it also extends it in a bunch of interesting ways. It's an open source project. It's used to document Python, like python.org was basically written in using Sphinx and restructured text. It can be used to document other languages besides Python. Like they have this notion of a domain or a language domain. So you can use Sphinx to document. They have domains for C++ and for JavaScript and Erlang and all sorts of languages. They actually didn't have one for .NET. I know. So we talked to Eric and the guys that read the docs, and they wrote one. So now there is actually a .NET domain for Sphinx, and that we're using as part of getting our API ref docs ready. It has a great community and an extensibility model. There's a bunch of extensions to Sphinx that are built in, and a whole bunch of extensions from the community that you can just use. And it is, of course, well documented at sphinx-doc. This is what a Sphinx project looks like. You have a project folder. That would be your project for the thing that you're trying to document, like your repo. And then you have a top-level docs folder. And then what makes it a Sphinx project is the conf.py file, and that is a chunk of Python. It's a configuration file that defines, what do you want to build? Do you want to build HTML? Do you want to build PDFs? And how do you want to build it? And then there's usually a make file that makes it easier to run local builds. And then you just have your restructured text files, your RST files, in a folder structure. To run a build, you just type make HTML. And then Sphinx adds a whole bunch of really cool features on top of restructured text. One of them is this notion of a TOC tree. This is a table of contents tree for your entire doc set, not just for one page. You saw me do the contents directive in restructured text. That was just for that page. It only picked up the TOC for that page. But if you want to generate a TOC for a whole doc set, that's what the TOC tree feature in Sphinx can do. Let me show you quickly what that looks like on our docs. I've got our docs open here. That's probably really small. Font size. Increase font size. That's a nice feature. You increase font size bigger. Oh, it's not going to open up the things over here. Well, anyway, I'll open up the file. So, if we look at our index for our ASP.NET docs. Okay, so here is the TOC tree for everything that we document in ASP.NET 5. And you can see it's just pointing to a bunch of other docs. And it's hierarchical, so it'll actually pick up the TOC tree definitions from all the subsections of your docs. Like if we go to Getting Started Index, where is that Getting Started Index? This is just the folder structure. There's another TOC entry. And that's what's used to build up that entire left nav that you see over here on the documentation page, and build up this entire TOC that you see in line. Cross-referencing is really great in Sphinx. You can define labels and then cross-reference across files. Point to a doc over there, or a particular point in a doc. You can point to an entire doc using colon doc colon. And then there's an extension to Sphinx called InterSphinx that lets you do cross-project references over the internet. And this is a really cool feature. The idea is that, imagine you have the .NET class libraries documented, and you have system string or whatever, and you want to point to system string because you're documenting your class library. Well, using InterSphinx, you can build a link inventory for, say, the .NET class library, and then share that as just a file that people can download. And then using InterSphinx on your project, you can just grab that inventory file and tell InterSphinx, I want to be able to generate links to this guy. Here's its base URL. Please, every time I say, link to the index page on the system.string, please figure that out based off of this inventory file. And we use that actually in our docs. If we look at our index page, and down here at the bottom, you can see here there's this ref to the .NET Core documentation, and instead of it being a hard-coded link, it just says, I want the stuff in the .NET inventory, go to the index page there. So you get semantic links across the internet. We think that's pretty sweet. Imagine this web of open source documentation. You get great syntax highlighting. This is an inline code block. It's got line numbers. It's got highlighted lines. Even more cool is you can do literal includes, where you have a code sample on disk, and you want to say, please include a chunk of code in my doc right here. I want these lines, and you can skip lines if you want. Dedent them so they're not sitting out in the middle of the page. Like if you're trying to pull out a piece of code that's been heavily indented into the C# file, you can dedent them. add line numbers, and then emphasize lines. It's a pretty cool feature. So then you can do things like build your samples and build your docs, and now you know your sample code actually compiles. It's not just freeform text sitting inside your page. And then Sphinx has a whole bunch of other really cool extensions. One that we worked with the Read the Docs guys is this auto API extension. This is what we're doing using for API RefGen. If I look on our, I have this set up as sort of a prototype form on our identity repo. So identity is like, you know, the thing we use for membership in ASP.NET. And then there's a branch here that I had pushed, API docs. So you notice I added a docs folder. And all I did here was specify a Sphinx project file. And there's nothing really else here because all that's configured in this project file is that auto API extension. There it is. Okay, and then down at the bottom, I just say, auto API, please build me .NET documentation, API ref docs, based off of the stuff that's in the source directory, okay? And then, I don't remember the URL. Let me go to, it's this guy. And then you can host it on Read the Docs and build it. And so here we have API ref docs for .NET code generated and hosted on Read the Docs. So I can go through my namespaces, and you see classes, and members, and methods, and syntax, and so forth. So there's API RefGen. That's done with just a Sphinx extension. There's the Sphinx extensions for generating RSS feeds, for wiring up Discus into your docs. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can use. Lastly, Read the Docs itself is a service. It's a free offering if your project is open source. They'll host your docs. They'll build them. They support GitHub and Bitbucket. It is all based on Sphinx. They do support Markdown, but really restructured text is the premier way to go. And they, of course, have great docs for how to use Read the Docs at docs.readthedocs.org. Say that 5 times fast. They're actually a pretty big site. Like, this is their stats. They get 15 million views per month. That's not bad. That's pretty huge. And I was looking at it. Like, is it going to come up? There it is. And I think we show up here someplace. We're not doing so bad either on this site. But they basically host a huge chunk of the Python community. So, you know, you can see their numbers. You know, 600,000 requests there. And where are we? There's docs to ASP.NET. You know, we're not doing too bad. We got, you know, 100,000 views. So, you know, pretty beefy site in terms of what they're running. So this is not something that's like, you know, just running a few projects. It's actually running a lot of things. They have great support for versioning. The versioning is based off of your branches and tags in your repo. You basically say, you know, I've got this tag in GitHub, or I mean my Git repo. I want to build that as a version on Read the Docs. And then that's where on that version picker you saw, you can then pick that as one of the doc versions that you see. They support localization using Git text and the PO files. And Read the Docs' own docs are actually localized. They actually use a crowdsourcing-based localization pattern. They'll give you full text search based off of Elasticsearch, and they support all the multiple files and a whole bunch of other features. To get started with Read the Docs, you just register an account, tell them where your repo is, and they'll start building it. So it's really simple to use, and I highly recommend it. So in summary, and I know I'm a little over time, our ASP.NET 5 docs, they're public, they're open source. We're building them using Read the Docs. Anyone can contribute. We encourage you all to help us out with the docs, fix issues, submit content, and it works great for your .NET projects and documentation as well. And I'm happy to take a couple questions. Yeah?
And what's the relationship between what you're building in the open source docs and what we normally find in the MSDN reference?
So MSDN reference is what it is. It's we would build our components and generate a bunch of XML files and hand them off to MSDN and wait some number of months. And eventually it makes its way onto MSDN and it would be there. And then if you wanted to change anything, it was a huge pain and it would take more months. And so that documentation is there. We long ago, actually, before ASP.NET, moved to having, you know, our own documentation site. ASP.NET's been around for a while. That's where we've been publishing content. Historically, we've been using still MSDN for API ref docs just because there wasn't anything else to use. But we want an experience where I showed that, do I still have it up? There's that edit on GitHub link. You should be able to click this link. It's not, unfortunately, not working in this particular build, but you should be able to click this link. It should take you right over to the code, where that / comment is right on that member, you should be able to submit a PR and say, you know, this code is, this comment is wrong. Submit a PR, we pull it in, a doc build gets pulled off, and you get now updated API ref docs on the source. Like that, there's nothing like that on MSDN. We will still have our docs be searchable from MSDN, discoverable from MSDN, but we think the system offers a lot more flexibility. Yeah?
Well, it's nice to see you have a bunch of cool tools, but what about some documentation? Last year, there were very heated discussion about there is very limited amount of documentation, especially conceptual documentation. Nobody outside Microsoft can really write, because we don't know why you did what you did and how it's supposed to work. If I remember correctly, the result was that you don't have people to write documentation. You don't have enough money for them. Did anything change since then, or?
We do have more people to write documentation. We've also, you know, leveraged some people from the community. Like Steve is one of those people that's been helping us out, and he's been great. Do I wish we had even more doc writers? Of course, yes. Well, we could always use more, but we do have. I think we do have sufficient people and funds at this point that we can do a good job at this. And I think also, once you involve the community and people helping, then people can and do contribute and want to help. And that does help a lot. So I think that collaboration actually makes this workable. Do I wish we had more? Yeah. But I think we actually do have a workable resourcing at this point.
And do you have some time frame, for example, when you will have the basic TOC outlined without the branches, like on RC1 or something?
Yeah, when we ship RTW is when I expect to have a complete doc set. I mean, we are still in preview right now, so the docs. I mean, we wrote a bunch of docs for beta 7, and then everything changes, and then you do docs for beta 8, and so we're doing our best to provide content as we ship the preview, so that people can have stuff to look at in addition to just trying to look at the code. It is difficult to document a moving target, but once we get to, we're stabilizing now for RC1, RC2, shipping. At that point, it becomes much easier to write docs, and I expect to see a lot more progress to getting to a full doc set.